Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. And I lost count today. I think this is four today. I have no idea. But hey, thanks for joining me on this journey of recording episode 265. We are recording episode 265 today. And today is August 13th. And hopefully it's sunny and warm, whatever you are. We're still in the summer season. And hopefully it lasts. We live in Canada, so every sunny day, it's a blessing, and we want more of those sunny days. I know people who live in warm areas and say, take it away, we don't want it. But here, there are some people in the Northern Hemisphere that probably thank you for that. So thanks again for joining me. I really appreciate it. I want to welcome our guest of honor and the guest speaker for this recording, Himang Upadhyay. And Upadhyay, sorry, I mispronounced your name, Upadhyay. I want to make sure that we frame this conversation correctly. So Himang Upadhyay is a senior manager of product management AI, works for LG Electronics. He is today presenting himself on his own capacity. We're not speaking on behalf of any other enterprise that he might work for, et cetera. So we're here to talk about several things. So one of the things that, for those who don't know, Himang is an enterprise product AI leader with 16 years of experience spanning enterprise, AI, digital commerce, product data, governance, and AI-enabled customer experience. And you've heard me talk about these topics before, so I can't wait, and I'm curious to hear what Himang's take on the topic. His specific focus, Himang's specific focus, is on something I find genuinely rare, not just building AI, but building AI that is measurable, governed, and actually stays in production. As you know, and everybody knows, my listeners on this podcast, and you heard me talk about this a million times, we do a lot of piloting, we put a lot of things in production, but we're pulling it out because either we did not plan for it correctly, we didn't design it correctly, I don't know. But we need to produce the things that stays in production and continue evolving. I think the key criteria that I keep hearing, or the key point that I keep hearing, is a lot of people are measuring these things or putting these things in place, and they're thinking, like, I just put it in place, you know, and I walk away and I'll visit it in 5 years. No, none of these AI agents, my understanding, is one and done. You actually can have to continue tweaking these things. We're here to find out a little bit more about this today. We're here to find out, A, the story of Himang Upadhyay. And also, I want to make sure that we give the audience information about AI. And for those of you who join me regularly on the AI Exchange, and if you're not part of the AI Exchange, I highly recommend that you join. We've got about 120 people on that networking group. It's a small networking group that is global in nature. We meet on Fridays at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's a virtual meeting. You don't have to travel. And it's free to attend. And this is where we discuss innovative AI ideas and use cases. So it's very, very interesting for those who are interested in the topic to join a group and exchange ideas. Nothing in there that probably, we're not selling anything, we're not trying to do any infomercial, we're just trying to share practical ideas on use cases for AI. Before I get started, I want to welcome our guest of honor. Welcome to the channel.
Thank you so much for a great introduction, Robin, and thank you for having me today. I'm really happy to be here. And first of all, thank you so much for, you know, recording this podcast in your busy schedule. This is your fourth episode, so thank you for that as well. And thank you.
No problem. I enjoy it. It's my passion to record. It's to actually have a conversation. And since I was, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when I entered this whole public side of things, I really enjoyed conversation with you. I didn't know how much I enjoyed it, but I look forward to the next podcast recording. It's like I get excited the day before and I start putting it in my mind, like, what am I going to talk about? What kind of question I'm going to ask? But I'm grateful, full of gratitude for all the guests, specifically you, Himang, for joining me today. As we say on this channel, Himang, before we get started, everybody gets the question. If you don't mind, what is your story? What got you here?
Sure. Very, very interesting, you know, story of mine as well. And of course, you know, yours, very motivating story, like how you have started your podcast. So I can resonate a little bit, you know, with your story as well. So let me, you know, talk about myself. I'm a product leader and working in the product management since 16 plus years. And I have started my career as a developer initially, very early in the stage. And at this stage, my passion was just building products and working on different, software and features for the customers. But at the times, there is one question always comes in my mind. I'm building all of this, but are we building the right thing for the right person or the business, right? And do we really need it? And why really we need that? So that particular question gradually pulled me into, product management. And I'm really, really enjoying that journey since then. So as my, career evolved, I work in different sector. Mainly, I entered into digital commerce and, platform transformation, product information management system, content management, asset management system. These are all the, back-end system in terms of engineering, coming from an engineering background. But product management itself really fascinated me because I started looking that in a different fence, how customer journey is going to evolve or how all of this platform transformation is going to touch this customer journey and how it is really impact the customer life and what value it is going to bring in, right? And there are lots of parts of the pieces also there, like, having a data governance, and more recently, I would call it, it is enterprise AI, how AI is going to, change the whole e-commerce industry and customer experience and the business operations. So what really connected all of those areas was something very simple, which is helping people make, better decision with less friction. So that's really motivation point for me. And in commerce, especially customers really, need reliable product information because that's what matters the most before even they make any confidence purchase at the end, right? And in localization world of yours, I would say, right? That you talk about a lot in your podcast is people need information that feels accurate and natural in their own language and the market that they live in, right? So in AI, users need to trust that the system will give them a dependable answer or, take the right action. So that's what really pulled me into product management from having, engineering background and started as a developer. And then lately, since 2-3 years, AI and technology as being my own passion, I also work in, different products on mine, which is I'm building an open source community to help small and medium businesses to, utilize that at really, really cost effective manner before they even decide to go further and invest, huge lot of amount of money so they can see a real value. And that's what brought me into the world and of, public speaking, doing more research and how I can help, small, medium industries and customers to drive more revenue and how I can be part of that change. And when I hear those recognition and really appreciation, that's what the win for me.
And, speaking of public speaking, I see from your LinkedIn profile, you've been on several TV outlets speaking in a variety of topics, specifically around technology and AI in general. Would you mind shedding some light on your public speaking side?
Sure, absolutely. So I was extrovert person in a way, since beginning, because I would love to, talk with my all networks. And I always make new friends and do networking with other people so that I learn more. So that in a way that helped me a lot. And I started, interacting with a lot of people and I learned a lot of things. I, started doing research. I started reading articles. So over a period of time, I have published my work. And in early this year, in January 2026, there is a reporter who actually looked at all of this work that I was producing after, learning from so many leaders out there. So they found me very suitable and fascinated. So they have sent me a message on LinkedIn to, invite me as a guest, because there is a whole big summit happening in India. And there are a lot of, leaders who are going all around the world, and especially from US as well. So they said, my perspective would be really helpful. So they invited me, and I am really honored that I got that opportunity as, starting this year. And this year seems very exciting for me. And since then, I have been invited into different podcasts, also, in a different other channel. And then I started contributing to other conferences to learn from others and also, put on the table what I know and learned so far. So I think that's really, really an exciting journey. And if I specifically talk about that particular channel talk, I think that was an interview panel discussion from there were, other leaders also part of that panel where we were, discussing about how AI is going to really impact or evolve even within India as well as outside India, how other, countries are adopting, how they are driving this effort, what that means for, small and medium businesses, what it really means for the street vendors, for an example, right? That was really, really great question I came across when I was interviewing that. And it was live, right? So it was spontaneous. So I think it was great.
You have to think on your feet, right, Himang?
Right. Yeah. And I was just being myself, and that was the great experience. And I realized it. And that's what I'm doing right now. So that's really helped me in a way to put my own perspective without thinking backward or looking at stuff and prepping. I think it just comes out so natural. And that what shows that, what we have learned over the period of time. So that was really a good experience. Yeah.
Did you do TED Talk?
Recently. Yeah. Yeah. That's
another I noticed something on your profile. You did a TED Talk as well, didn't you?
Right. Yes. That was very recent. I think it was 3 weeks back. I was also invited on TED Talk after, they have, again, looked at my work from my website as well as my LinkedIn. So they found it suitable. And there was an application that was in place in US and the other regions. So they found myself, in that chapter, and they invited me to talk about into that session. That is very much focused again on AI and agentic and how, it will be implemented in education, how really it changed my life as being in the product world, and how it is going to change all this, new Gen Z kids or even Gen Alpha kids. So I think it was wonderful conversation and was a great experience.
And for the audience, where are you located? You're located in New York? Did I get that right?
I'm located in New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey, excellent.
Right.
Now, there is a moment in most people's career where they stop being a practitioner, for the lack of better word, a doer, and they start being a thinker, someone who is trying to shape the discipline, or how the discipline works, and not just to actually do the work, but just to think strategically a little bit better down the road and figure out what the next product or evolution is going to look like. When did that shift happen to you, and what was the trigger, if you don't mind, Himang?
Sure, I can definitely explain that, and that's really a good question, right? Because people struggle in a way that, they want to do so much, right? But where do they start? I think that starting point is really the challenging one for many people, even for myself, right? So that's how I learned and overcome that challenge over the period of time. So if you look at, I'll give an example of AI, right? AI really came, which is exciting for everybody. It does a lot of repeatable tasks, right? And day by day, like if we see 3 years back and the whole journey, how AI really evolved from being a generative AI to agent-to-agent orchestration to AGI. And now we are moving towards superhuman AI, that means that AI will be even much more smarter than what humans can do. So the challenge that people feel is like, okay, where do I start, right? How do I implement AI in my own personal life or a professional workflow or a day-to-day setup that I have been given at my either company or business? So I think the way that I look at it is you need to figure out what are the repeatable tasks that you are continuously doing as part of your duties? What are the business use cases that you think would matters the most for your customers and to generate a revenue, right? That is the first starting point. These are the questions that you should ask yourself, right? Can this work? Is it going to impact, my business or a customer who are coming on our, let's say, a website and trying to learn about the product or trying to, purchase a service? What are those measurement KPIs that you can look for to define a success of your business? Or look at the workflow on a day-to-day basis, which are repetitive tasks as part of your duties. What is that look like? Are you generating a lot of content? Are you generating email draft to respond to a lot of questions coming your way? What is that, right? So that's the first point. Once you actually figure out what those are, the next step would be to figure out, okay, how do you automate that with AI? Right? What are the triggers that you can utilize? What are the skills said that it provides, and that's a learning curve, of course. The people who are very new to AI and don't know how to use ChatGPT or Claude, I'm sure at some level everybody knows it today, right? In terms of like a conversational chatbot. But beyond that, it's not just a conversational chatbot today. Even beyond that, it does a lot of, you know, scheduling tasks where you can automate by, you know, giving set of instruction for your repetitive task, and you can create a skill within Claude or ChatGPT and then schedule those tasks based on frequency that you want, and it will actually do the task for you, and it will give you output that you are actually repeatedly doing on a day-to-day basis. Of course, that is human insight required to make sure this output is accurate enough, right? And it has to make sense to the people that you're providing, not just like, because sometimes, you know, information or instruction that you have given is not complete, even though you feel it's complete, but it's not complete in a way that your AI is not able to understand exactly how you think about it. So it is a prompt engineering, right? You need to make sure that, you know, AI understands the output that you want to produce. It understands the context as well around what you want to produce. So,
and you can't be vague, right, Aman?
Right, you can be vague. Right. And you get an output, of course. AI models are mature enough now that they will, you know, orchestrate and figure out some of the answer based on the history of conversation that you might have earlier. So it can take that reference and, you know, produce the results. But giving a better context, if AI doesn't have, then, you know, it will be helpful and your output would be accurate.
Now, for the audience, I mean, you must have like a hell of a balancing act to do. Because you built a public platform, the website, the thought leadership presence. We already talked about several public speaking engagements. And for those who are involved in public speaking, that takes a little bit of a preparation. You just don't show up and you start talking. You got to get a few things, your thoughts in order. You got to articulate what you want to say, and you got to say it correctly. And on top of a demanding career, like an enterprise product development, what made you decide that contributing to the community mattered and not just doing the work internally? And how do you balance the two?
Sure. That's a very interesting question. And thank you for asking that, because, you know, spot on. That's kind of a motivation that I have gathered, I think, 2 years back. What I realized is, you know, we are doing so much. We know so much, and we learn from others as well, right? And we don't know so much as well at the same time, right? That we need to know. So I realized that, you know, just by doing the work and just working within the environment that you have been established is not enough. Then you are just, you know, making yourself bound to the environment that you are in, then you are not learning enough from others as well. So I think that's where I started. That's kind of a motivational point for me, right? Where I have realized that I'm already, you know, watching this podcast of others, and there is so much that I'm learning. And there is so much when I was talking to people that I think, yeah, these are the things that is very common and people would know. But I figure out like there is a lot of things that people doesn't know when I'm talking to them, and they really fascinate and ask me a lot of questions and then really want to associate with me to be part of that, you know, work that I'm doing. For example, I have created my own website, and it's not new, right? I have my own website even before AI came in, but that was very, it is challenging to update.
We're talking about Hemang AI, right? That's your website?
Correct. HemangAI.com, right. So that website I created, and it's kind of a platform that I created for my own self where people can associate with me when they find out, right? And that's how my work is being discovered to others. And when people are really see that, you know, interest, a common ground, they actually connect with me. I get a lot of, you know, requests on LinkedIn. They are actually sending me inquiry from my website, and then we start talking. And then I realize there is so much that I didn't know that we could have done, right? And that's where I started building, you know, open source products where there are other, you know, product people who also contributing with me on those product as a contributor and adding a lot of value. Now, just imagine if I haven't done all of this, I would haven't reached to the point to start something like this, right? And I don't know what would come my way along the line in future. So I think I realized that, you know, just doing work for one employer is a service that you are providing to that particular company for the service that they are looking for to produce a result, right? But out of that, there is a lot of other things that you can contribute to the industry. As a community, there is so much that you can give back, right? And then learn from others when they hear your perspective. And in some cases, you might be wrong. So you realize, okay, I think these are the great perspective that I didn't know before when I hear other leaders. And that's how, you know, we learn from each other. And that motivates me to contribute more and more and engage with more, you know, conferences and public speaking when I get an opportunity. And this is a great example as well, right?
We're having a conversation here.
Right. We didn't know each other and we are having a conversation. And I hope that, you know, people will learn so much from this conversation. And there is so much that I will get a value when people will get connected with me after looking at this podcast. So I'm hoping for the best.
And I hope this first conversation in many to come. And hopefully, as they say, this is the beginning, a start of something good together. When you say, if you don't mind, Himang, when you say production-ready AI, what does it actually mean in practice? Because I suspect the definition is a lot more demanding than what most organizations mean when they say AI project is alive. Is live. I think there's more that goes into it than, you know, we flipped the button on this thing. I tried it, a couple of people tried it, and it worked, whatever that they're working on. What makes it production ready, in your opinion?
Sure. And I like the way that you say, oh, my AI project is ready, right? And that's the biggest, I would say, a lot of organization making a mistake or a struggle that they go through. They just want to do an AI project. I think the right question is, you know, what are the pain points that one organization has, or what is it that they are trying to improve? Is it a customer experience? Is it their internal process? Is it a business operation? Is it like, you know, end-to-end journey? Is it a customer support? What is that? I think that's a real question that anybody should start with. And once you have that, you know, questions come up in your mind that you are trying to solve for, and then look at if AI is the only answer to solve those problems, because sometimes you might not need AI at all and you can just solve the problem without having AI in the picture, because that may be cost effective, right? And maybe AI is an answer, right? But the only way that you can identify that is asking the right questions to yourself or to your organization and the problems that you're facing on a day-to-day basis. And then you can only know by interviewing so many other stakeholders, which is part of my duty as being a product person. So I realize, you know, these are the questions that one should ask before even they say, oh, AI project is ready. Now, to you, coming to your point, like, you know, when these projects will become, you know, production ready, right? So I see that a lot of companies or teams are struggling to make their AI initiatives going from pilot to production. Now, let's say they figure out, okay, this is what we are solving. We want to, you know, increase our conversion. We want to have a better customer experience, right? So they start doing, like, you know, one AI initiatives, and they go and test all of the, you know, testing across different things. I'll take one example so it's easier to, you know, talk through. Let's say there is an initiatives of building a AI driven search, right? So people can actually search in a natural language and they get the right product. Mm-hmm. Now, what I often see that people come across is they just start with one category or a product, which is a right approach in a way, by the way, right? When you're starting any initiatives. So you actually start in a controlled environment, minimum category and SKUs, and then you see, okay, what kind of, you know, question answer is being handled by the AI. Now there are 10 sets of, you know, questions that is being simulated, I would say, by the team. And this seems to have a right answers. And they get excited. Okay, I think this is looking promising, right? The demo.
Yeah, looking promising. Game. I love that statement. Yeah. Looking promising, right. Guys.
Yeah. And everybody get excited in the room, even along with all the leadership and cross-functional team. I think that, you know, that's great. Let's go ahead and launch it. The moment they just, you know, launch it, what happens is now you are dealing with a massive catalog, massive, you know, product information, a lot of integrating data points that you have across the system, which are anyway legacy or outdated, right? In some cases, now your product data is maybe fragmented, inconsistent, or not in a not right form that AI can understand enough, right? When you go at scale. So, but people get excited and they just do it. And then they see a lot of things happens on production because they have tested 10 questions on a search query and they get a right results, but it's customer and you don't know what kind of customers coming to your website and asking one question 10 different ways, right? Which you didn't really expect it. Now things started to break and you see, oh no, I think this is getting worse because AI is not giving the right answer to the customer and they are struggling even more to get to the point that they need to. So I think that's where enterprises struggle to go from pilot to production And just to establish that, I think you need a right framework. So AI model is just one part of your product, right? Not the actual product. So there are, you know, different things that you need as part of your framework to go to a production. And I was looking at this research by Gartner, which says that, you know, there is 85% of organizations seems to have AI adoption, which is not a problem, right? 85% is a great number, but 5% of them are able to make it to the production. So this, wow, that is very tiny number.
That's a very stark number.
Exactly. And even more than that, what they have claimed is in coming 2027, out of this 5%, even 40% is going to fail because there is no right framework that people are following to make it productionized. So I think that's the biggest, I think, industry challenge in a whole, I would say.
You know, you were saying earlier, like one of the things is that we're, you know, you were mentioning like, people need to discover, people need to, you know, take the initiative and put something together and make it work. You know, I come from a software background, and I do feel like by miniaturizing, by democratizing the development process of these tools, we forgot how to deploy a, you know, a hardened, a well-tested software piece. Because we're miniature, we can be democratizing it, right? So we're saying to, you know, the admin assistant, we're saying to the project manager, we're saying to the engineer, you've got the tools now. You can develop them if you want to. I mean, we're hosting a partner of mine. We're hosting a vibe coding course that's taking place here in September, and that's for non-coder, like for people who never coded in their life, and you know, people can learn these skills. But by learning these skills and developing these tools on a personal level to make it wide open and to make people use it, as you were saying earlier, put it on a website and, you know, get your customer service, replace your customer service agent in a chatbot, may not be the addressable forum that you want to use this tool. Am I correct? Like before you go public wide in a certain tool, it still has to follow a certain process from a software deployment perspective. You know, hardened software, well-tested. And you got to go through the alpha, beta, et cetera. And at the same time, you still have to do some security check on it. What if there's security vulnerability? We don't.
Yep. And that's a great point. And I would add to that, right? Like you are absolutely correct. I think that is much, much needed. And that's what's missing in many organizations. And much who are even following, they're just concentrating themselves into the technological measurement KPI, I would say. What you really need is a governance across the organization, not only the technology measurement KPIs, right? Or just governance around just technology. You need it across the board. So you have like, you know, product managers, you do have your marketing people, you have your legal, so you need to define accountability across all the person who is, responsible to check each and every output that they are expecting their customer to see. Right. And once you get that feedback, it's a feedback loop across the board. And once you have those feedback, you have to ingest that into your technology stack. And to your point, I think we need that whole monitoring system around that. So anytime there is a, you know, high risk items comes up, you have a, you know, all these alerts so your technology team can handle while other people are managing, you know, rest of the things. So I think that's I think the whole governance piece, which is also very important in the organization that needs to be established. And oftentimes what I see is people are doing that after the project launches, not before it. So my point of view in that is you need that governance piece way before even you start the project. You need to have this operational alignment and cross-functional alignment and ownership and accountability across the board so that you are very much confident that the path that you are moving towards is successful and you don't need to worry about what happens if something goes wrong.
You know, you mentioned something earlier, right? So why are we doing these projects? And for those CEOs that they're listening to this conversation, and I know you guys, you're listening to this conversation. I get your comments. For the CEOs and the owners of companies, they're listening to this conversation between me and Hemang. Let me tell you something. It goes beyond you want to save money. I get that. This goes without saying. Every CEO wants to improve their financial position of the company. And it cannot be top down. Say, go deploy AI. I've had this conversation many times. CEOs telling their staff, go deploy AI. The staff comes in and say, okay, we're going to deploy AI. We don't know what to do, but let's figure out something so the boss can be happy. So I don't know, like you mentioned the stats earlier by Gartner, but that's part of it, isn't it?
It is. It is indeed, and I would not say that it is wrong approach or bad when you have been giving this AI tools to the, all teams, and CEO is giving this really a support across the board to introduce AI in the organization. I think the missing part here is that people get motivated, but they don't know when to use AI, right? What are those workflows where they have to utilize? So what happens is, I was seeing another report as well that there is a team who has used all of the tokens and they burn the tokens because their KPI is measured based on how many tokens are you going to use. But my point of view is that that's great. I think you have to use those tokens to make your life easy and efficient. But are you using those tokens for the right use? Or are you just, having some experiment and just wasting those tokens on unnecessary models that even not required? For example, I will give you, right? You are having question and answer to figure out to reach to a one point that you are looking at, and you just need a better answer, right? And you have just one document which you are not reading, but you just need a specific answer out of it. You upload that document, ask a question. Now there are different types of model that Claude and ChatGPT provides. Do you really need Fable 5 for this kind of task? If you use that, my answer would be no, right? You might not need it. You just need Sonnet for lower model, which can handle this kind of task very efficiently. So you can save a lot of tokens there, right? But oftentimes what I see is, okay, Fable 5 is great and it gives a great response and we see that it's a smart model in the market. People just use it for sake of using it because they don't know, right, what use cases make sense or not. So I think that's where a lot of tokens are being burned. It's just a very hypothetical example I'm giving, but there could be many that I have come across around the people when they're working. So I think that's when people are burning a lot of tokens, and that's where companies go wrong when we see these techs.
Hemang, what's your message to employee who's listening to our conversation right now and says, hey, listen, man, I got nothing to do with this. That's our IT department who handles this. And I've been in that position. That's the reason I'm asking the question. I'm setting people up a little bit because I've been in that shoes where I try to do something and I say, oh no, AI should control that. I don't think IT department should control it. And you got to put it through IT first, and you can't do anything without IT. I feel this is like out of the window now because the tools are so democratized that now people have access to them. Example. Two years back, before I left my corporate job, I wanted to build a specifically designed an email outreach program to reach out to my customers. I don't want to use any tool online, and I don't want to use any built-in CRM stuff. I want to control it myself. And I asked IT, I said, here's the specs. Can you build it for me? Oh no, Robin, you would be like the last thing on our list, and that will take like 10 years. And I need it like by Saturday. I need to launch something on the weekend. So literally, I sat down with Codex and a few other tools. I was able to put it together. Now, I didn't tell IT. I ran this stupid thing, and it worked, and it's delivered what it's supposed to deliver. In fact, I had a higher open rate from those emails than any other CRM produced email output. Now, people say, well, that was against IT policy. No, it isn't. Why? It's because the tools are available for us to use. And if you're within the confined of your own network, and these tools are operational within your confined of your own networks, that means it passed security, it is installed on your machine, you can work with them, it is not the end of the world. Don't be afraid, just try something. And may not work for 1,000 people, but may work for you. And we started the work earlier, like you said, people need to figure out what can they automate of their job, and what can they focus on in terms of the thinking, the strategy, etc. Do you really want to sit down and manage your calendar like day in, day out? Like, that's boring. Somebody should be, an agent should be managing.
You're absolutely correct. And I would like to say all of the employees who are listening, working in different departments, right? You should not now, you said it correctly. You should not really rely on your IT department for everything, right? Because now AI, and that's why AI as a technology is there to make your life easier, not to depend on AI, IT. And that's what we have seen, from decades, if we look back, every technology questions would go to technology and IT department. But now it is changing, right? For example, there is a creative team that I have come across. They never come to us, or even product management person, right? They don't really come to us and for the consulting, because they actually figured out a way that how they can create different, you know, creative copy for that marketing purpose, because the tool that they have been using, they are providing this consulting on a very high level. They just say that, okay, these are the steps that you should follow and you're good to go. They just took that, onboarded that tool, they started experimenting that, and they see a great value. And you know what? The same concept I wanted to actually suggest. And what I realized is, oh, I'm suggesting this, but these people has already onboarded. So I was amazed to see that even there are, you know, teams who are really motivated and they are really taking their initiatives on their own rather than just relying on IT for everything. Or, you know, going to a team who is knowledgeable, but they are able to figure out themselves because now AI is accessible to everyone. So you can figure out many things which are really basic by yourself, and you shouldn't rely on IT for each and everything. I think you should go to IT for high value item where you see that, you know, there is a high risk, or you feel that, you know, you are stuck and you can't figure out the way out with even with the tools that you are using, or you might not know the right tool, right? Because there are hundreds of tools out there. And I know that, you know, since last 1.5 year, I was really experimenting and anything and everything that is being offered publicly. So I'm always excited to experiment and see what value it is bringing. So there are so many tools. It is hard to catch up sometime. That's how it became. Now I think the race is a little slow as of today, I feel. But yeah, it was evolving so fast. So if you don't know the tools, it's okay. Yeah, you can go and ask. You can ask your peers. You can, and that's where I think this, you know, network.
You can ask AI itself. It'll teach you.
Exactly. It will teach you. It will find, you know, the right resources that you can go and check. And by the way, I can give you a great resource that you can find is, you know, Product Hunt, where are great products being really launched every day and people are putting there to experiment and get feedback. So you can also look for that. And there is a website called thereisanaiforthat.com. That's a great
There's an AI for that.com?
Exactly. That's a website name. You know, there was a colleague of mine and he saw all of this I'm doing and he got excited and he said, I want to learn so much. Can you please suggest me resources? And there are two areas that he saw me, how I contribute, right? One is called AI Builder. So I'm also an AI Builder, yeah. Right? I build products with AI. And there is another one where you actually use tools to make your life efficient and, you know, produce a repetitive work. So he said, how do you find all these tools? I didn't know and I don't know how to look for it. Even though I ask my ChatGPT and Claude, they are not giving me the right tool that you discovered. I said, okay, there is a website I'm giving you. There's an AI for that. And so which one? I said, there is an AI for that.com.
That's funny. That's an easy to remember too, right?
Right, it is.
Now for the audience, so you know, like the context of what we're talking about. So in 2025, just to let you know, and get an update on this one, 2026 is not done yet, but I'm giving you 2025 numbers. $1.5 trillion were spent globally on AI infrastructure. That's in 2025. So what did we get out of that? So here's what we got out of that. According to research, only, and I'm going to say this, only 88% of the organization adopted AI, at least in one function, reported a qualitative gain in one function, but innovation localized to task efficiency. So the innovation was down to the micro tasks, right? So not at a global level in an organization, just miniaturized tasks, managing day-to-day activities. On the unmet financial expectation, only 1 in 4 met their financial expectation. And according to Deloitte, the return on investment for AI projects right now sits at 2 to 4 years to get your money back from an AI, from an AI project investment. So I don't know. I had somebody on the podcast, Himang said to me, like, look, AI right now is like, you know, it's sugar rush. Like when people hear the word AI, they get excited. The investors, everybody, like private equity firms, they get all hyped up with AI and they start pouring money into it. It's just like literally sugar rush. I don't know how old I am, but you are, but I am old enough to remember the dot-com crash when we used to joke around that. We used to say anybody can spell IP address at the time. They were being hired at $100,000 a year. Are we overhyping this?
So there are two parts to it. At some extent, I would say yes, right? But there is also a lot of value gain. So I think here is the thing, what's happening. People look at AI as an exciting technology and, you know, it will do magical thing. And once it does, we don't need to worry about it. It will just take care of everything. So I think let's just put all the money that we have so that AI can do all these tasks and we will be getting a lot of money back, right? I think that's the wrong prediction in a way. And the approach that a lot of you know, small startups.
I mean, we're seeing companies laying off people and they end up hiring them back.
Yep. And okay, there is also another perspective to that as well. Okay, not all layoffs has the AI impact. Layoffs are happening way before even AI came right into the picture. I have seen that, you know, there was a recession, there was an economy impact, there was, you know, companies were struggling to with their finances. So there was layoffs happening. But now today, because there is an AI, it's easier to blame AI to kind of, you know, have all the layoffs and people has a panic out of it. It just to create a panic. And that's where, you know, this AI hype comes into the picture. That
just like during COVID, Himang, when companies went out and subleased all their office buildings, and right. then they end up trying to find a place to put an office after that.
Right. And look, you know what? We are going to the office 5 days a week now. Now you need an office, right? So I think people are just taking their judgment too early, I would say. But I would also agree at some extent that, yes, there are company valuation, which is really, really, you know, ridiculously doesn't make sense, right? So how would you generate all of this money if you are investing so much right away? So I think it's a long-term game. If you look at, like, you know, a 10-year, 5 to 10-year perspective, or to your point, 2 to 4-year perspective that even Deloitte said, right, then it may make sense. That prediction is valid. The reason being that, you know, the humanity is not yet ready for everything, and not everybody knows about what AI can do and what AI can't do, right? So I think that's the biggest gap, right? Whoever mm-hmm. lives in the field of AI or the researcher, they know the right way to use it. But the people who are really away from the technology background, they don't know all of the use case. And that means, you know, they don't know the right way to use it. So they are in their behavior of shopping or buying, for an example, you know, there is still a time where we have to wait for them to adapt, to follow the process, what AI can do, right? And once we see all of this behavior changes of a consumer, that's when you can gain the value. Until then, I think it's a hype, I would say, right? So yeah. I think it's hard to predict what would happen, but I would say it's not completely 100% hype, but the valuation that has been given to the companies are definitely unfair. It's not at the scale it should be. That's why, you know, we see that there is not enough ROI gain that every company has from every AI initiative that they take, because they are not looking at the right use cases. But if you look at the right use cases and the problem that you're solving, probably you'll gain so much.
Not just,
I have seen.
Like right now, it feels to me like we used to call it throw mud on the wall and see what sticks, you know, just put a bunch of projects out and see which project sticks. And, you know, yeah, you're going to get like 95% failure. It sounds like it's part of the modus of operandi. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think that's how investor firms are working as well, right? They just identify 10 companies, they invest in 10 companies, and then hoping for, you know, two will do really great, that they can recover mm-hmm. all that they can lose in 8 companies.
So, yep. In your experience, Himang, if you don't mind, when a pilot to production failure primarily, is it like because of technology problem? I hear a lot about data, like garbage in, garbage out may affect the pilot. It may affect the entire product for that reason. Or maybe an organizational problem, or perhaps a leadership problem. Like I've talked to a lot of leaders about pushing AI, and each one of them has a different technique. Some of them, they incentivize their staff and they give them a little bit of an incentive. You learn, you deploy, you get a little bit of bonus. Some of them, they use threat. You don't deploy, we'll fire you. There's a variety of techniques, carrots and the stick. I don't know. But in your opinion, generally speaking, if you take a scan across, where do you think the pilot to production failure primarily reside?
Yeah, I usually it's a combination of things, right? Combination of things are happening. And to your point, I love that, you know, people are really telling them you'll be fired if you don't use it. Even other hand, what I see is don't use AI. If you use AI, I will fire you.
Oh, yeah, there's obviously the other side of it.
So it's a mindset. I think it's just a mindset, you know, in the environment that, you know, you live in. And then that's the biggest gap and challenge that people go through nowadays, right? Because it's a difference of opinion and people are not coming to a common ground. So it's a combination. But if I had to choose the most influential factor in all, I would say it's a leadership alignment for sure. Right.
The leadership alignment. Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Because technology problems are often visible. You can see that, right?
And you can fix them probably, right?
And you can fix them. Yeah. We can test the model quality, improve the architecture, or, you know, change a technology component to it, or You know, data problems are more difficult in that sense, I would say, but they are still diagnosed. You can still diagnose and fix it. So I would say organizational and, you know, leadership problems are harder to fix because they appear as, you know, having an unclear ownership across the board or conflicting incentive that they are getting or slow decisions that they are making or an inability to agree on what success really looks like among, you know, all of them. So I have seen a team may have excellent technology, but no owner for the business outcome, right? There is no business at all. Like, what's a business plan? We can do so much. Technology can produce so much, but what's a business plan? What's an alignment? How it is going to work operationally? Who is going to manage what? So on the other side, like another team may own the, you know, data, but have no incentive to improvise it, right? You're the one who has to improve it. They rely often on, you know, other team to clean it, for example. I think that's the biggest gap too. Then legal and security may be invited only, you know, after the pilot is complete. And then business leader may expect, you know, immediate financial return from these experimental capabilities that you have introduced. So I also see, you know, this is a very good point that I want to bring in my perspective. And I would like to have, you know, all of the CEO and leaders to hear this out. I see that, you know, whenever there is a good idea or initiative that is being taken, we always hope for, you know, the best case scenario. We just say that it has to go success. Sure. I mean, that's everybody just, you know, work to be successful, right? Nobody really work to get failure.
Yeah. We nobody gets up that, in the okay, morning and say, right. I want to be the best failure ever.
Right. Nobody does that. Everybody wants to be successful. But I think you need to have a mindset and a support to your team where you should say, okay, I think we have this great idea. This is seems to be higher risk item. So let's actually experiment with our A/B testing or a limited category of product. Just launch it with the, you know, one or two product if you don't feel comfortable. Let's see how it is performing, what value that you are gaining out of it, and then scale it, right? And sometimes you will fail, right? That is part of the process because you will learn so much if you fail. And that's how we become successful. That's a philosophy that we hear a lot over the years from many leaders. But practically, even the leaders are not following themselves, right? That's what I see. So I would like to hear them out that, you know, always have a philosophy of failure mode activated as part of your ecosystem and have acceptance across the teams and, you know, leaders among themselves, not to blame that, oh, you initiated this and we just see how terribly we failed. I mean, he didn't wish for the failure either.
No.
But that happens, you know, that happens. So you just have to take some measures to protect.
And I want to say something like, when people are trying AI and they fail, the next move is, and you are in the financial capital of the world in New York, the next move that I'm seeing quite often is private equity firms just like start hovering around, you know, these companies. Oh, you tried AI, it didn't work. What they end up doing is just picking it up, will deploy AI properly, as they think, and they just sell it for parts or something. I don't know what they do with it. But if you are trying to deploy AI technology in your company, and you're consistently failing or not consistently failing, you tried it, you gave up in some cases, it didn't work. And I hear a lot, quite a bit of that. We tried it, Robin, it didn't work. So we moved on to the old traditional way. I don't know how long you're going to be able to keep up, to be honest with you, because your competitors, and don't tell me you don't have competitors, you do. Your competitors, they're going to be catching up to you. And it's a matter of time because they either bypass you or you become a dust of history. So there are a few things you need to do, and you need to do them now. If your objective is to continue with your business, sustain your company in the future. If your objective is not, if your objective is saying, listen, I'm 70 years old, I just want to sell the company, continue doing what you're doing. You'll be out soon, I think. I don't know, but those companies are not going to last long. Because somebody else told me, and I'm not sure if you agree with this statement, Himang, he told me, find a little corner in the market that has no AI, hide in it, don't tell anybody about it, and operate within that environment. How long can you hide? What is this, hide and seek?
That's a no transparency. I wouldn't agree with that. You need a transparency. Your customer is not going to trust you if you do that for a long time, right? So I mean, okay to have a transparency, right?
And of course,
provide the accurate result. You can say that, yeah, AI can make mistakes, right? That's a disclosure. That's why we see all of this disclosure nowadays.
You use the word measurable. And I love that because if we can measure something, then we can say, did it work or did not work? And you use it deliberately alongside of things like governed and production ready. What specifically do you suggest for the audience to measure when they're deploying these types of tools, Himang?
Sure. So the first mistake is measuring AI only through the technical metrics, as I said before, right? People are often just go behind, like, you know, how accurate it is, what is the latency and model performance that matters, but they do not tell us whether the product really created value or not, right? That's a business KPI or a measurement, I would say, right? So before even launching an AI initiative, I would ask different questions. Ask, like, what user behavior are you trying to change? What business outcomes should improve? Or what risk must remain within the acceptable boundaries that you created? And what is our, you know, baseline without even AI, right? What would that baseline look like as a business? So suppose a localization company, I'm taking an example because that's a close one for this conversation, to use AI to support their, you know, translation workflow. So it may report that the model generated thousands of words in seconds, right? And that sounds really impressive to somebody who is looking at it, but then it is an activity metrics, right? It's not necessarily an outcome that you want. So you need to see what outcome it is. So the better questions are, did turnaround time really improve? Did human correction, you know, effort that we have put in and we have seen is decreased? Was terminology consistency maintained or not across the board? Did customer satisfaction improve at the end, right? Did critical errors increases or decreases, right? What happened to the cost per completed project, right? Once you invest so much. So I think about the measurement in three different layers, I would put it easy to, you know, understand. One is like quality. You look at the quality. What is the output of your, you know, AI model? Is it accurate? Is it relevant? Is it safe? And, you know, culturally, is it appropriate? And then the second is your operational performance, right? Did it reduce the time and effort or a cost without creating, you know, a hidden rework to the example that you're giving? So, and the third is like the business impact, right? Did it improve the retention of the customer? Did it really increase the conversion or a customer satisfaction score or a delivery speed or profitability? So I would say, you know, every AI success metrics needs a guardrail in their own, and faster translation is not just a success, right? If critical errors are increasing. It's like,
well, it's a balance between output and quality, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. Yep, it is. So we need to balance that as well. And we have to see, like, you know, lower service cost is not a success itself if customer trust is declining at that point. So you need to actually have a solution which can be trusted by the customer and they're comfortable using that. So these are the metrics I think, you know, business should take, just not just focus on a technical measurement when they have any AI initiatives. And also, one more important point I want to throw it here is, like, you know, there are two companies I see, right? One is a product-based company who sells the product, like being a, you know, working at LG, like we sell products, right? But if there is another company who is just selling the service or software as a product, right? So I would suggest all of this, you know, consulting businesses that offer your pilot projects to the, you know, businesses and gain the business, commit the business outcome that you can give, not just say that, oh, this is a fancy thing that we have built. Use it and see if you are getting value. Nobody's gonna ready to invest in it. Even though they do, they will fail and they will blame you, right? Isn't it? And
yeah, show them the ROI, basically.
Right, exactly. Show them ROI, run the pilot. It shouldn't be like, you know, huge, even a fraction of the portion that you can show, then it looks really promising. And that's a challenge that I see everybody is going through in world of who are providing this, you know, AI consulting software services. So I would suggest take your approach in this way. And that is something that I personally always look for, right? Who are those people who will provide this value so that we can be confident enough to invest in the product that you brought in?
Absolutely. Now, the audience of this channel is mostly heavily concentrated in the localization industry and language technologies. If you were advising a mid-sized localization company right now on who is trying to integrate AI responsibly into their workflow, based on what we just talked about earlier, the nightmare in our localization industry is that balance between output and quality, right? We want to produce quality output, but we want to produce quality. And what is the one structural thing that you need them to put in place before they scale up their solutions?
Sure. I would resist the temptation to begin by selecting which model is great, right? Start with one workflow where business pain is very much clear and major, and I'll still push back on that, right? It might be a first draft translation or, you know, terminology validation internally that you are using, or quality assurance, or, you know, project intact or a content, you know, classification. So I will put it in a different element if you have to do that. And I'm thinking loud here. So maybe you just need to establish, you know, a clear owned use cases that you have over the period of time. Like one person should own just the outcome of what you have, right? Not merely the technology implementation only. But if the objective is to reduce turnaround time while maintaining the quality, or someone must, you know, on both sides of the equation as well, if that's something that can work. Second, you know, build a language data foundation. What that means is, you know, organize your translation memory and, you know, style guideline or approved terminology or customer preferences that you have seen. So look at those data and see what preferences that you see and what are the rules that is being defined for the market that you're launching this. So the AI system should not have the, you know, rediscover the organization's language standard every time it receives the request from you. So if these are the things which are well established and defined, I think the output that you get would be valuable. And then you should have an eval system, right? Build a representative or, you know, a test set across languages, like different languages and content type and, you know, risk levels before even you scale it further. So do not eval only fluency. You have to, you know, measure the accuracy, terminology, adherence, and cultural, you know, appropriateness or hallucination, and amount of human correction that requires after even you get the output. So once those are the element that you can actually put it in part of your operational workflow, the company can really expand, you know, deliberately, I would say.
If you were sitting across the senior leader right now, someone with a real budget authority, they got money to spend basically, who genuinely wanted to do AI right inside of their enterprise, what is the single most important thing you tell them, you know, in the first 5 minutes? What do they need to know?
So if they have a money to invest, I would say, okay, what is the, again, I would push back, it's a repetitive thing maybe, but, you know, I would push back on the same thing that, you know, you have to figure out what are the business use cases that, and what are the solutions that you are trying to bring in. Is it going to solve the customer problem, business operation problem, internal workflow management, or, you know, a human resource issue or efficiency? What is that? Before you invest, figure out what that is and what value that you are going to get out of it, so that humans should remain involved where, you know, all the context and consequences and ambiguity is really high while you are introducing all of this you know, solution and invest in it. So I think once you have those questions answered, you should invest it right away.
Now, without giving too many things away, you mentioned that you have future plans that you're excited about. And without giving, you know, I want to say the ship away, what is the next chapter for Hemang Apadwe?
Yeah, I'm really focused on continuing my journey to contribute, right, in enterprise AI, especially because that's definitely, I believe, that is going to change in a lot of way, besides of hype factor, and then also, you know, product leadership journey that I'm on. Yep. So anybody who needs, you know, product side of help and they think that, you know, I can add value, sure thing, you know, please contact me via LinkedIn or my website. Happy to help. So that's my, you know, future plan. And while working on digital commerce and, you know, responsible adoption of AI, that also includes, you know, my public speaking engagement, the research work that I'm doing. By the way, I didn't mention that, you know, recently I have also part of the research on quantum computing, right? That would seems like a future, and I'm excited to see how AI can be integrated into quantum computing and what that will bring to all the businesses and people and how that will change the whole era. So I think I'm excited about that, and have you know, wrote a research paperwork where we really was acknowledged as a best paper award. So please go and check those papers, would be helpful if you are into that field. And also, you know, I'm mentoring to startup companies as a volunteer, because it's exciting as an advisor, so that I also, you know, see and be part of that journey when they become successful, that satisfy myself. So I'm very much interested how agentic AI changes the role in product management and product leadership as I continue my journey. And just to say everybody out loud here, whoever wants to associate with me as part of open source community or building, you know, a product which you feel that will solve the problem and where you think it is great idea to collaborate, I'm happy to. And that's where I would love to contribute in future.
Well, I want to thank you for this. Appreciate it. And I'm sure the audience has taken note of this. If you had to leave the audience with one actionable idea that they can take from this conversation today and put it into motion in the next few days, what would that be?
Sure. Okay. I would say choose one AI initiatives, but along the side, first thing in the morning, figure out what exact problem you're solving, what measurable outcome that you are looking for, what can go wrong, is it something that is measurable that you are going to define, who owns the result once you are trying to solve for it. So operational alignment and cross-functional alignment across the board and the governance that you should put in. I think that's the first thing that you should do before even starting any AI initiative. And then ask all this business owner, the data owner, or the technology owner, or legal or other who are actually managing risk to review that and come to a same page and work together. So if those people, provide different answer, then do not scale the system yet. That disagreement is the first problem to solve for you. So you don't need another AI demonstration until you actually figure out that problem. And you need an alignment around the outcome, ownership, and acceptable risk that you have. So please, focus on that, align all of this problem before you do any AI initiatives.
And my last question, if you don't mind, Himang, is where can people find you, connect with you, and get engaged with what you're doing with your projects?
Sure. I have my GitHub repo, and you can literally, search by Himang AI, because just for simplicity, I'm not a tool, because a lot of tools are being used as AI, but I'm not a tool. I'm just using that as a simplicity, so it's easier for people to find me. So you can just search by Himang AI on Git repo, or you can go to LinkedIn. It's easier. You can just search by first and last name or Himang AI again. You will find me easily there. Or my website is also pretty much, you can remember it easily. It's himangai.com. So go to www.himangai.com, connect with me, happy to collaborate.
And for the audience who is trying to reach out, if you're interested in this conversation, want to continue the conversation with Himang, please reach out to me and I'll be happy to connect you if you can't find them. And I'll be happy to facilitate an introduction. That's my job. That's what I do here. That's part of the community services that I offer. And I want to thank our audience for listening in. But before we wrap it up, to be honest, Himang, is there anything else you'd like to add? Did we cover all the points?
I think we cover all the points, but I would like to definitely, specify one thing, which is really fascinating for me. The way that you are using AI in your, own business, being a one-man army, would be really, really fascinating, right? So I would like to tell audience that Robin is using, the tool that he built himself to automate the whole process of, building this, podcast, publishing it, building all different types of, component to it. So, which is very great. So thank you so much. That's really exciting.
This is a compliment coming from you. I take that as a badge of honor. I appreciate it. It's been a while building this. I think there's about 28 programs I counted the other day built within that. And every one of those programs does certain things. Sort of you build an army, but you build it within agents, which
I
like.
I recommend that you should productionize this and build that as a product and sell it. And I wish you the best if that happens.
Yeah, I'd love to partner with you on this one. That'd be cool.
Sure. happy to. Yeah, I'm always excited about this kind of solutions, which brings value. So sure.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Himang, for joining me today. It was a great conversation. And thanks for helping me recording episode 265. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much. On behalf of the audience, I want to thank our guest speaker. And from me and Himang, I want to thank you all for listening in, for joining us on this conversation. Hopefully you found it interesting. Hopefully you learned a few things. And if you did, please share your comments, contribute to the conversation, keep the engagement going by, and if you're watching us on YouTube, for instance, you can comment on our YouTube channel. There's about, for this episode, for instance, we'll produce close to about 30 videos. They all go on YouTube. Feel free to share, comment, reuse the video. I don't block the video. You can download them and reuse them somewhere else. It's up to you. And also, if you're listening on our podcast channels, thank you again for listening in. And thanks for following us on the podcast channel. We're available everywhere pretty much now. Spotify, Apple Cast, etc. And or if where I summarize also, if you come into my blog post, robinayoub.blog, where I summarize these conversation in an archivable form. A lot of people now are using them for research, for, just to see what happened 2 or 3 years ago with one of my guests. They go in, they type their name, they show up, and they go through the conversation. 2 or 3 minute reads, it gives you the context. So Thanks, everybody. And I really appreciate it. I love you all. And I thank you so much. And I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks, everybody.